Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Today we have Lynn DelMastro Thompson, a certified hypnotherapist, energy healer, and entrepreneur for the last 13 years. After being misdiagnosed with leukemia at the age of 25, she's become passionate about sharing her message. Lynn believes that a chronic illness diagnosis does not have to be a life sentence. She is a sought-after speaker, podcaster, and author of the Amazon bestseller, You Are Not Your Diagnosis. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, this is going to be a great conversation. I'm really passionate about this. And I know too that because you've experienced this, your patients say you have such compassion and empathy. And that's such a beautiful quality that you hold. And I wanted to dive right into what it was like when you experienced the effects of a diagnosis, and then we'll just take it from there.
That sounds good. So my diagnosis happened when I was 25. I think you did say that in the bio. And I went from thinking that I was perfectly healthy. I actually went for elective surgery. I was going to have a breast reduction. And in the span of a few weeks, I went from, you know, just thinking that was what was going to happen to being told my pre-op blood work looked abnormal and surgery getting canceled. And down the rabbit hole I went. And about 2 weeks later, after all of these tests, after being in two different hospitals in two different cities in California, they finally came up with a diagnosis, which was chronic myelogenous leukemia. And I can still kind of flip back in my mind to that moment in that hospital room, hearing that word, hearing the word leukemia, and just like the absolute terror, really, that I remember feeling when I heard that. You know, my mind raced. I thought, what does this mean? Does this mean that I'm going to have a bone marrow transplant, that I'm going to need chemotherapy? Like, you know, you have no roadmap in that moment. It's just the sheer terror of what you think leukemia means. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I didn't have to go through chemotherapy. They put me on a medication, which in some ways was like chemo in a pill form. And I suffered basically for 3 years, you know, thinking that was what I had, thinking I was on the right medication. And finally, like after I kept questioning, when I kept being told, well, it looks like this medication works for you, Lynn, like your labs look better. But at the same time, I watched as my body just shrunk in size. Like I became kind of a human skeleton at one point, very, very thin, too thin. And I was like, why is this happening? This doesn't make any sense. You know, when I'm being told like the medication's working, you're supposedly getting better, and nobody would answer that. And it took 3 years to get a referral to a different specialist. And when I finally did, he like flipped through all these medical records I brought and he said, I don't think this was ever leukemia.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, so it was like that internal sense of like, I knew something was wrong. And then I kept asking my primary doctor, like, please refer me to a different hematologist. And he wouldn't do it. He kept saying, well, I went to medical school with this guy. Like, he's great. And I was like, my experience of him is not great.
Yeah.
And it took basically leaving. I was in graduate school at the time. It took figuring out how to get health insurance outside of the graduate school system, and leaving that program, getting a job, getting insurance, and then I finally got a new primary doctor and a referral. So it was a very maddening and frustrating and just agonizing 3 years of my life when nobody would listen to me.
Mm. And so the diagnosis wasn't leukemia.
No.
Was it even something serious or...
Yes. Yeah. So it's a different type of blood disorder, one that's, you know, not nearly as scary as chronic myelogenous leukemia, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of somewhat in that same family. But the sad thing is, you know, for 3 years, I wasn't getting the right medication. I was being given a medication that wasn't correct, that had this awful side effect of, like, every time I would take it, I would just get nauseous. Like, that's where it was kind of like chemo in a pill. You know, I was wasting away partly because I was nauseous all the time and was hard to keep food down.
Yeah. Like chemo is kind of a poison, right?
Exactly. You know, and I've had people ask me over the years, like, you know, what are the effects of taking that? It's like, who completely knows, you know, taking something that you absolutely didn't need for 3 years. I don't know long-term what effects that creates in the body. I'm sure it's not good.
Yeah. But you know, what's really interesting is how you've become so passionate about teaching that, you know, you were not your diagnosis, which, you know, as I've experienced people getting diagnosis, I wish that we had a medical system where that wasn't involved in healing. That I find the diagnosis itself is very detrimental.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I know for some people, I've witnessed them like wanting an answer. It's like they want a label for what's happening. And somehow for some people, it does seem to bring some level of peace of mind. But then I always wonder about how attached people become, because a lot of people say, oh, I have this, you know, it's like they walk around kind of with a name badge that says, you know, I have an autoimmune disease. I have fibromyalgia, and then it becomes like an identity. And that was really part of why I wrote the book and why it's called You Are Not Your Diagnosis, is because of how we become so identified with these labels that a doctor gives us.
Right. And you also talk about the mind-body connection and that initial diagnosis. It's with such fear and dread that it actually affects our body and the outcome.
Exactly. Yeah. So most people are familiar with the idea and the concept of the placebo effect, because we hear about that, you know, in drug trials and things like that. But there is also the nocebo effect. So it's like, you know, how a doctor delivers that news, like, is there hope that is included in that message of, you know, here's the diagnosis we've come up with? Or is it like, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, you only have 6 months to live in certain people's cases, you know, and they're told that. Mm-hmm. It's like the mind is so powerful. We hear that. And some people just attach right to that. And I've read studies of, you know, people who died like 6 months to the day they were told that. And then they've even done an autopsy on that person. And it's like, well, the cancer actually wasn't really that progressed that they should have died, but it's like the mind can create that. Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. So tell us your main messages in your book, You Are Not Your Diagnosis. I really want to jump into that.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, first of all, the book is kind of in three parts. So the first part is like a deep dive into my own story. So I walk you through like that whole journey that I went through and kind of the aftermath of hearing that diagnosis, how I went to a really dark place, and kind of how I struggled to get out of that dark place and started finding hope in other systems, places, you know, that I never had been exposed to before in terms of alternative medicine. When doctors wouldn't listen to me, I was like, well, I'm going to find things that make me feel some better at least. So that's kind of part one. And then the second part is really about what I learned from this journey that I went on. So part of, I do talk about the placebo effect. I talk about, you know, how we talk about the diagnosis. I kind of alluded to that before and saying, you know, people walk around saying, I have this. It's almost like I become, you know, I am cancer or I am autoimmune, instead of like, I am a person who is healing from this. And I don't even think there's language out there. This was the thing that I explored in this one chapter. It's like, how do you even talk about a diagnosis without using words that kind of attach to it and claim it? It's like, you know, I have this, I am a cancer survivor, you know, I'm a cancer patient. It's like, I am, I have. Those are powerful words, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to like try to figure out and get creative. Like the way I've always talked about it is it's like, I am healing from this because I'd rather put my energy into, you know, yes, that might be like a label somebody's given me, but if I'm going to talk about it, it's like, I'm healing from this, not I have this and it's permanent.
Right. And so when you say that, do you also use like visualization to see yourself as better?
Definitely. Yeah. And that's, you know, now that I'm trained in hypnosis too, like I use a lot of belief work on myself. I use a lot of visualization because I think even if you don't have a chronic illness label, we're all healing on some level, you know, our bodies every day.
Yeah.
Like cells die, cells replace themselves. We're not always like in that 100% perfect health. So it's powerful to just visualize your body like healing and being in a state of balance.
Yeah. Even times of grief can, you know, send your body into the message that it's not worth living, right?
Yep. Our minds are so, so powerful, you know, and it can be used in a positive way, or it can be used in a negative way. And I actually even learned that kind of early in my life. When I was a teenager, I would get these horrible migraines, and they were migraines that were so bad that they would send me to the emergency room because all of the medications they tried to give me at home, like they just didn't cut it. And I started to see, like, when I would freak out, if I would have the first sign of a migraine and I would panic, it was like I could create a migraine just through that little symptom and then panicking. So I had to learn, and it took me a long time. I didn't really learn it when I was 12 to figure out, oh, if I can do that in the negative, I can also do that in a powerful way. Like, I have control over my body.
Yeah. And did you learn that it was a certain state often that got you into the headache, you know, the physical? So first was the mental, emotional, and then the physical. So you could turn that around.
Right. Yeah. And I learned, you know, because I had been sent when I was like 12 or 13, my pediatrician actually said, we'll go to this person that does something called biofeedback. And I was like, okay, what the heck is that? And how's he going to fix my problem? And the person that I went to see taught me how to like make my hands get warmer with the power of my mind. And I was really good at that, but I couldn't connect at that time, at that age, how that really would help me. And then later I realized as I got older, it was like, oh, it's really partly about that, but it's also creating a calm feeling. It's like, even if I have the initial symptoms of a migraine, if I stay calm, it can actually just go away. It doesn't have to become a headache that's so bad I have to go to the emergency room.
Yeah. But the very thought of how much it could hurt sent you into a panic, right?
Exactly. You know, I was just so scared because, of course, nobody wants to go to the emergency room, you know, and get shot up with a bunch of Demerol and all sorts of things and be just in agony. I mean, the emergency room is no fun, period.
Right. Rather not. And I just, I find biofeedback very valuable because it shows, you know, our brain's wavelengths and mm-hmm. when you can actually see when you control them, how it changes what happens physically.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's other sensors too, not just the brain, but like you can learn how to regulate your heart rhythm, the heart rate coherence. Some people have probably heard of that company, HeartMath, that's made it more kind of a household concept. You know, so just by the simple act of breathing, we can create some order in our body instead of, you know, most people, unfortunately, don't pay attention to their breathing. You know, we just kind of let it be the automatic breathing that happens instead of taking conscious breaths.
Yeah. I have a really good friend who trains Olympic athletes with biofeedback, but I think we could all use, you know, the help that comes from learning biofeedback.
Exactly. Yeah, that was actually one of the first things that I did in my practice. I don't really do it anymore because I don't see people in person. So, you know, it's one of those modalities that you need the person in front of you to hook them up to the sensors and see that on a computer screen. But it was very powerful for many people that I worked with to be able to sit there and look at a screen and see, oh, if I just the simple act of, you know, relaxing and breathing makes all of these changes and I can see it in real time on a computer screen.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it more real somehow. So you've gone through part one and part two of your book. So tell us about part three.
Yeah. So part three is very much, it gives some tools that people can start to use when they're on their journey of trying to, you know, find their way through chronic illness. So I really wanted the book to be short. It's only about 100 pages, so it's a very easy read. And I wanted it also to give people things to walk away with, because I love books where, you know, you walk away and it's like, oh, I actually have something I can use from it, mm-hmm. not just a bunch of theoretical concepts that somebody, you know, it's like, oh, that was interesting, but what do I take from this? So I teach a little bit about some ways to start to tune into our bodies and how to like start to listen to the messages that our bodies are giving and the symptoms we experience.
So yeah, can you describe some of those?
Yeah. So, you know, I always preface when I teach this as like, it's a practice. So a lot of people, the first time they do something like this, if they've never done it before, they think, if they don't get some profound answer from their body immediately, they're doing it wrong or it doesn't work. So if you do this, allow it to be something you do maybe daily for a week or so. And what I suggest is first just kind of getting into a relaxed state, you know, taking some deep breaths, the kinds of things that you do to just maybe go into like meditation in essence. And then you bring your focus to an area of your body, you know, like that's giving you pain. So say maybe your shoulder has been hurting you or your stomach, you've been having digestive issues. So you bring your focus to that area and then you start to actually have a dialogue with it in your mind. So asking a couple of the questions I love to use are, what does this area of my body want me to know? And then you just kind of ask that question and you're just quiet and you allow whatever information and however that information comes through to happen. So I think a lot of people think it's going to be, you know, a visual, like I'm going to see a picture of something. And some people aren't really visual people. So sometimes you may just kind of have a sense of something. You may hear a word in your mind. So be open to how that comes through. And if you don't get anything the first time, like just be patient, like maybe ask a second time. And if not, maybe do it again, you know, in a day or two. And then also you can ask, like, what does this area need from me? So, you know, not only what does it want me to know, but is there anything that I can do to better support this area of my body? And again, just being open to like how that information comes through, being patient. And I've had people who the first time was like, yeah, and I didn't get anything. And maybe they're not as tapped into their bodies. Maybe they've had a negative relationship with their body. So it can be a building of trust that needs to happen first.
Well, yeah. And we're not used to listening to our body. Like no one has taught us that.
No, you'd think it would be a wonderful thing, you know, and I think kids are very actually naturally intuitive that way. And then we kind of get taught out of it, you know, as we grow up and it's like, oh, well, you have a headache. Well, did you take a Tylenol? Like, you know, just you're busy. Why don't you just take a Tylenol and move on? Yeah. Instead of like, oh, well, maybe that headache just means like you're dehydrated today or slept funny and you have a crink in your neck.
Right. And then I get into what exact type of pain it is. And most people have never actually tuned into it. So it really takes them time to, you know, to get into that.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Like, where is it coming from? I'm curious, because I'm curious how you take, what approach you take there with that.
Well, when you're treating with homeopathy, everyone's individual, right? So say someone has hip pain, that hip pain will be different to, if you asked 100 different people, they'd each experience it differently. And so their bodies would be expressing it differently, right? So, you know, whether it was a burning pain or tight or screeching, and all those things are very important and, you know, tell us something. And often they're revealing about, you know, what's going on there, like you're saying. And it just takes people time to tune into that because they've never done it.
That's really interesting. Yeah. That's to kind of tune into like the quality of it and, you know, instead of just, oh, it hurts. Like that's usually, most people are just like, it's painful. I know I've even seen that, like, you know, in a chiropractor intake where it's like, what type of pain is it? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it, you know, is it this? Is it that? And it can be hard to know how to answer those.
Right. Because we're so used to saying, well, it's just pain. It's pain.
Right. It just hurts.
So you're going, you're asking the area what it can reveal that would help you understand what's going on, right?
Right.
Louise Hay has a little book about that. And I used to use it. Now I believe we can each tap into that. So sometimes I'll go look at a curiosity if it resonates or if it's the same information. But it's a really neat little book.
Yeah, I think I'm familiar with that. Is that You Can Heal Your Life?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome, yeah.
I used to get, when I was dancing, my knees would give out. And I was like, what the heck is that about? You know, where they'd suddenly become weak? And in her book, it's about fear of being judged. And when you're dancing, you're right out getting judged, right? And because of my background in my childhood, I had a fear of being judged. And after I realized it, I could kind of laugh at myself and the knee pain would go away. It was really interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. A lot of times it's like, if we get the message, you know, it goes away. Like my knee actually brought me to, you know, one of the energy systems I practice, because I had heard of it before, like a year before, but I never went for an appointment. And then I just had this pain that was like, it wasn't from an injury or anything. I just woke up one day and it hurt. And it just kept hurting. And I was like, well, I'm not going to go to a doctor. I know I didn't hurt myself. Like it has some root from something, but I didn't know what it was. And finally, it was like after months of just trying everything, like massage and acupuncture and chiropractic, and it didn't really resolve. I was like, well, what is it saying? And I went to see someone who did this thing called Body Talk. And she was like, what happened right before this pain came on? Like, was there anything stressful or traumatic? And I hadn't made this connection in my own mind until she helped me like open that door. And I was like, oh yeah, my parents had been staying with me and my dad had been going through this mental health crisis. And so I had like a very stressful few weeks of trying to get him help, dealing with, you know, the medical system in that sense. And then they left and I was like, well, I'm self-employed, so I better start working again immediately. And my knee was like, you didn't even like acknowledge what you just went through in the past 2 weeks. Yeah. So it was fascinating.
Isn't it? I always say the body is a mirror of what's going on in the mind.
Very much so. Yeah. And our bodies, I think, are also kind of like storehouses of, you know, it's like, oh, when we say, I don't have time to deal with my grief right now, or I don't have time to deal with, you know, my frustration and anger, I'll get back to it later, which most of the time we can honestly admit we usually don't do. It's like it gets stuck in the body, you know. Yeah. The body's like, okay, well, I'll hold on to this for you because you said you're going to come back to it later. And then it's there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's mind-body information we're talking about. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was why when I went, you know, back to school and I got the degree in psychology, I was like, I don't want to just study just the psychology and just look at the mind. I'm like, what about the body too? Like we have to, it's a two-way dialogue happening here. It's not, we don't have like a line in our neck where, you know, okay, this is one system. And then from the neck down, it's something else. It's all one.
Right. And I love how you're asking people to tune into their own pain, because then they can come up with the answers themselves, which I believe is really empowering.
It really is, you know, and sometimes I do find people get stuck, and that's where having someone who has tools to help you figure it out, like I was stuck with my knee, you know, I mean, if somebody's, I had this intuition of like, I feel like my knee is talking to me, but I would describe to people, I'm like, I think it's speaking Japanese because I don't get the message. And, you know, so I needed a translator. And so sometimes we do. We need a translator because we get stuck and we're like, I've been asking this question for weeks and I don't get any information.
Yeah. Did you ever go back and try to sort out what caused the blood disorder?
I was always told that it was like a genetic route to it. So when I was actually 10, I think I had an experience where I had very abnormally high platelet counts. Like my parents, actually, the only reason we found that was because I had this severe abdominal pain and they thought maybe I was having appendicitis. So they, you know, took me to the emergency room to figure out why was I in agonizing pain and what could be done. And they didn't find appendicitis. They didn't find anything. The only thing they found was like your platelet count is very elevated. But at that point, they didn't know what it was, you know, and they poked and prodded me for a few years after that. You know, I would go for regular blood draws and it was, my parents got to the point where they're like, this is really traumatic for her. You know, like we're not seeing anything change. We're not getting any information. So they finally just said, let's not put our focus on this. Let's just, she's healthy. You know, she does ballet at a high level for like an hour and a half, three times a week. Let's not keep disturbing her and making this an emotional trauma.
Wise choice.
Yeah. And I once had a doctor later say, well, it's a good thing they didn't put a diagnosis on it because they probably would have labeled it as something that needed, you know, a bone marrow transplant at that time.
Right. Yeah. So interesting. So is there more tools in chapter 3?
So that's kind of the primary thing that I teach is in the book is about kind of just learning to listen to the body. There's a few links in that chapter too, where I have some videos that are available on my website where I teach. We have a tool. Unfortunately, since we don't have a video version of this, it's hard to teach it, but it's called the Cortices technique from Body Talk. And it's like a brain balancing integration technique. And I do have a free version of it on my website. So if people want to, you know, check that out, we can link to it and they can see how to do it. Cause it's hard to tell people like how to do it in words. It's easier to watch a video and learn.
Yeah. So it balances the right and left
hemispheres of the brain. It also diminishes like any cold spots, any areas where there's not adequate blood supply in the brain, which also actually is, you know, because we talked about that, the body and the brain being kind of mirrors, it can also heal physical pain in the body because that's reflected in places in our brain.
Right. So interesting. Excellent. So, and you got into hypnotherapy probably for the same reason, right? Because it connects to the unconscious mind, that place that we have trouble connecting to because it's more buried.
Right. Yeah. And hypnosis was kind of a more recent add to my practice. So I think I've been certified for about 18 months now. And the reason I decided to bring it in too was I was finding with a lot of my clients, you know, doing this powerful energy work that I do, they would say to me, you know, do you think this will work? And I would always say, of course, I think it will work. You know, I don't take on clients that I don't think I can help. And, you know, they would ask that sometimes multiple times. And I was like, okay, but do you think this will work for you? Like there was a gap there in what they were believing was possible for themselves. And that was when I went, I think I need like another tool to be able to help people work with their beliefs and work with their mind and their subconscious.
Right. Because that can be a real barrier if someone doesn't believe that they can heal themselves. Like that's a mind barrier to actually healing.
Exactly. Like if we don't believe that something is going to work for us, if it's not going to, you know, like, well, I'm just trying this as like a last ditch effort, you know, somebody told me maybe this would help, but I don't really think it's going to help me. Then again, kind of going back to, it's almost like you're creating a nocebo for yourself. You know, you're saying, well, I don't think this is really going to work. So oftentimes it doesn't work because you don't believe it will.
Yeah. And we're pretty programmed into traditional medicine, you know, what we see in North America. So we need to.
Exactly. Yeah. And that actually makes me think of kind of, I had my own little aha with this topic and hypnosis last year. I was in Sedona and I was listening to Dr. Bruce Lipton speak. And someone asked a question and he said, well, I really, you know, I believe I can heal. I do all of these things, but I haven't seen that change yet. So like, what's the gap here? And I remember his answer was, well, have you looked at what you were programmed with in the first 7 years of your life about, is it possible for you to heal? Who does the healing, right? Because most of us in our first 7 years, you get sick, where do you go? You go to the doctor. Yeah. And, you know, I think most of us were told the doctor will make you feel better. You know, he'll fix it. And I realized for myself, that was an area I had never, you know, tapped into and done work on. So I quickly actually wrote myself a hypnosis script and started working right away on that to get rid of any old beliefs that I picked up when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's really important to realize we're programmed from the,
yes,
especially yep, the first 7 years, right?
Yeah, we're kind of in a hypnotic state in those first 7 years.
Yeah. And what do our parents do? Take us to someone else who has more authority over our own intuition and knowing, and we give our power away.
Exactly. Yeah, we're so conditioned to do that.
So how have you used hypnotherapy?
Yeah, so I use hypnotherapy a lot to explore with people, you know, what do they believe about healing? Like, who does the healing? Are they responsible for their health and healing? Does healing have to be hard? Does it have to be, you know, take years? Or can we create some new programs of, you know, healing can be easy. I'm the one that's in charge. I take my power back from, you know, the doctors. And I found it's tremendously powerful and in that area. And I also use it a lot with people with trauma as well. I've found that it's a great second tool because I have a lot of tools from the body talk system that work powerfully for trauma. But sometimes we also have to work with the subconscious mind, which houses a lot of the stories of our trauma as well.
Yeah. And remains so hidden. So it helps, it brings it to the surface.
Exactly. Yeah, it runs things 95% of the time, but you know, we don't really realize what's going on in the subconscious a lot of the time.
Yeah, you're right. It runs the show. So, speaking of Bruce Lipton, let's jump into just what is epigenetics and are your genes your destiny?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics. And when I got to see Bruce last year, it was just like a highlight of the year for me. So, you know, most of us, it's like we hear, you know, this is genetic, like, oh, this, or we say things like, this runs in my family, you know, diabetes runs in my family, for example, this one we hear a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But what Bruce teaches and what epigenetics is all about is that it's not really about your genes, your DNA. It's about these little switches that sit on top of the genes that turn them on and turn them off. So the cool thing about that is we have a lot more control and influence over that than the actual, you know, double helix of the DNA. We can look at how trauma affects these different switches in our genes. We can look at how the toxins that we get exposed to create or, you know, changes in expression, stress, you know, the foods that we eat. Like there's just a long list of things that, you know, if you hear that list of things, those things we can do something about. It's not just that message that for years, you know, we got is like, oh, well, too bad, you have bad genes.
Right.
You know, and nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. And such a powerful message that you're powerless, right? I often think of say, for example, someone that has a great fear of cancer. So they eat well, they exercise, they clean living, the whole bit, but all the time playing in the back of their mind, in their unconscious, is a fear of cancer. You know, I'm afraid I'm going to get cancer, right? And what do they draw to them? Cancer.
Right.
Even though they've done everything perfectly.
Right. Yeah. They've made a lot of good lifestyle choices, but the beliefs too can be what changed the epigenetics as well. So that's why, yeah, it's a key area we can't leave out of the mix to address.
Yeah. So what would you suggest for someone that has been diagnosed or has that fear in the back of their mind that they have trouble switching off? I imagine you say, come get some hypnosis.
I mean, that's definitely, you know, a powerful way to do it. You know, you can start working with it outside of hypnosis. You know, you can look at that belief and create some new beliefs for yourself. So say, you know, I'm just trying to pull a belief that we could work with out of my mind. You know, this is incurable. How about that's a good one, right? Mm-hmm. That we often hear from doctors. So is that really what we want to believe going forward? Or would we rather believe, you know, my body is capable of healing? So you can create, that's just kind of one replacement belief. You could create multiple beliefs that go along with that. Or you could look at, you know, several negative beliefs you have and create some powerful, empowered new beliefs. And one of the things that I do with my clients is when we create this list of new beliefs that they want to have, you actually record it in your own voice. So you record yourself saying it out loud, which for most people, there's resistance there because most people are like, I hate the sound of my own voice on a recording. Mm-hmm. But you listen to it, you like get past that, work through it, and then listen to it like multiple times a day or walk around. You don't even have to listen to it all the time and just say to yourself, like, my body is healing each and every day, and become that person who believes that. Like, take that on as your identity, is like, I'm a person who heals, not I'm a person with an incurable disease.
Right. And it's important to do it daily and repeat it because you're overcoming the past programming, right?
Right. And so when we're working with that, we're working with it through the conscious mind, it takes a lot more repetitions. You know, we have to kind of like keep hammering it in, so to speak. If you're going straight to the subconscious, it can be faster to be able to reprogram it. But I teach people both because we're not in hypnosis. Like if you were working with me, you're not going to walk around in hypnosis 24 hours a day. You'll usually maybe do, you know, if you do it twice a day, maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes total. What are you doing with your brain the rest of the time when you're walking around in your day-to-day life? You can listen to the hypnosis and then go back out and say, yeah, I have an incurable disease. I'm not getting any better. And it's like, you have to just keep redirecting your thoughts.
Yeah. Right. And remove the fear behind it. You know, exactly. The fear of death is the biggest fear of all, isn't it? And just to realize that we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. So there's really nothing to fear in the first place.
Right. But yeah, the fear of death, especially I think in Western societies, is huge, you know. Mm-hmm. And many people, it's like they'd do anything just to stay alive. And then there's not the question of like, is there a quality of life? Like, do you really want to exist if you're just in complete suffering all the time? I don't think I would want to.
No, and you've missed the message of what the pain or the disease is trying to teach you, right? And becoming, exactly. Yeah, mastering and gaining, getting your power back to heal it. So beautiful. Finally, one final question. What is energy healing and what's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so that's a big question. So my view of like energy healing is it's kind of tapping into the innate power of the body to do its healing work. So there's many different types and styles. Most people have heard of like Reiki. That's kind of one of the most common ones, commonly known ones. But it's just, you know, using the natural flow of energy and communication in our bodies to create the conditions to heal, I guess would be my simple explanation of a very complicated topic.
Right. And we're more than physical. We have these energetic fields and bodies. And often the disease starts there first because blockage, and then it affects our, so the mind creates the blockage in the energy body, and then it affects the physical later on, right?
Yep. But most people, we get so stuck in that looking just at the physical. And most approaches to healing are very focused on that as well. It's like, take this supplement, do this protocol, you know, change your diet. Which those things can be great. I'm not knocking them, but if it's coming from a higher level where the root of it is, that isn't always going to fix what's going on.
Exactly. Got to look at the root.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much, Lynn. I enjoyed this immensely. So
me too. I always love getting to talk with like-minded people and to share some knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah, so nice. Now tell people where they can get hold of you or find your book.
Yes. So my book you can find actually on Amazon. So You Are Not Your Diagnosis. And you can find me on my website, which is heartfirehealingllc.com. And I'm also on social media, like on Instagram, I'm at heartfirehealing.
Heartfirehealingllc.com.
Yes. Yeah. Somebody else had Heartfire Healing. So I had to put in the LLC to have that be the name, because my name of my business is Heartfire Healing.
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.